Good afternoon, everybody. The title of my talk is Operations Reform, Tom Sawyering Your Way to Better Operations. A little bit about myself. My name's Tom Limoncelli. I'm the SRE manager at StackOverflow.com. Who here has heard of Stack Overflow? One, two, three, four. Okay, some of you. Excellent. Good to hear that. I've been a sysadmin for much too long. I believe this is my 29th year of attending Usenix functions. So, yeah, I'm way old. And I blog at everythingsysadmin.com, and I tweet at YesThatTom, and I have a 3 times a year column in ACMQ magazine. But enough about me. Let's, a lot of DevOps talks, they talk about the CI/CD pipeline or all the silos, and a lot of DevOps talks are in that area. They're on the dev side. This talk is very much on the operations side. So I'm very excited to kind of change the trend here. One thing I want to say about this talk, though, is often my talks, I have the cool animations and the pictures and everything, and I'm not doing that. These slides are very simple this time. In fact, what I'm going to do instead of fancy slides is I'm just going to tell 3 stories and maybe a little more. Okay, so let's tell the first story. The first story is about big initiative. So rewind the clock back to 1994. There I am, a very young system administrator, and I'm working at a very large bureaucratic company. And if you've ever worked at very large companies, they often have like these quarterly all-employee meetings, and this one was very much like that. And so some VP is in front of the whole company giving this talk about this big initiative, and I'm so enthusiastic about the initiative. It's really caught me up. I'm like, yeah, let's do this. This is great. And walking out of the auditorium, I still remember I was talking to a coworker. I'll change his name to Andrew for this. And I was like, this is great. I'm going to do, to be part of the initiative, I'm going to do this and this, and I think our team should do this and this and the other thing. I said, so Andrew, what are you going to do as part of the initiative? And he said, Tom, I'm not going to do anything. And so imagine me, very young, enthusiastic system administrator, and I'm shocked that Andrew is not going to be part of the initiative. And I said, why? He said, Tom, I've been at this company long, long time, and eventually you'll learn that these vice presidents, they announce these big initiatives, and if you ignore them, they go away. I was heartbroken. I was so in love with the initiative that I'd learned, in the last hour. And he was right. That was the weirdest thing. He was right. Operations can say no. They can say no to these big top-down directives because they have the excuses. We're underfunded. We can't do that. We're under-resourced. We don't have the people to do that. There's so much history in our systems. If we touch anything, it'll break. We can't participate. And this was a life lesson for me. What it taught me is that I should make it a mission in my life to learn ways of convincing people outside of the top-down hierarchy. And one of my role models in that is the book Tom Sawyer. He gets people to paint a fence for him, not by saying, I need you to paint this fence. It wasn't top-down. It was, I bet you couldn't paint this fence as well as I could, right? That's the kind of thing that he said, and he got everyone else to paint the fence. So I've always been on the lookout for that, and this talk is, I'm going to talk about a couple things that I've learned with one specific example. Another place that I've expressed some of these statements or these learnings is there's a book by IT Revolution Press. You can download this. It's a short book. I helped put it together. It's 4 case studies of DevOps transformations, going from legacy to DevOps. And one thing you'll notice is in the successful case studies, none of them were top-down. And in fact, some of the case studies were successful despite management. So that's a good resource. Okay, so story number two, Google's operational hygiene assessment. So I was at Google from 2006 to 2013, about 7 years. Now, around 2009, Google SRE realized that their operational hygiene was uneven. Now, operational hygiene is that kind of stuff that everyone should do, like, you know, hygiene, like brushing your teeth, right? We all know we should brush our teeth. There's no debate over whether or not we should brush our teeth. We might debate what kind of toothpaste or how often we should brush our teeth, but I think we're all pretty good on the toothbrushing concept, right? And so, like, backups are an operational hygiene, right? If you want to debate whether or not we should do backups, you're at the wrong conference. I think that debate was settled a long time ago. Monitoring, that debate was settled a long time ago. Now, you might debate which product to use or how often or the SLA or whatever, but we should be doing all these kind of things. And at Google, they realized that, you know, some services were better run than others. How do we fix this? Well, there could have been this top-down directive, all teams must do the following things, but they knew that that wasn't going to work. So they came up with this service assessment. It was just a spreadsheet. And every team filled out the spreadsheet. Now, here's a mock-up of kind of what it looked like. Each column is a different month, so every month the team would fill in their column for their service, and different hygiene-related things, like, you know, how are we on regular response, which is like tickets, and emergency response, which is like being paged. Monitoring, capacity planning, lifecycle management was like introducing new releases, et cetera, et cetera. I won't go through them all. And so each team just spent an hour a month on each service just going through and filling in the column for that month. Now, a big bureaucratic company would have done it differently, right? They would have hired a assessment manager for each team, and it would have been, you know, months or hours or days of work per team. And this is not that at all. This is very, very simple. This gave Google S3 a lot of data that they could use. For example, a team could roll up their all their services or all their each service into a summary like this and see how they're doing. Now, how many people have worked for years and felt like we're not going anywhere because you didn't keep history? This shows some great history. You could see that service A has been kind of teetering between 1 and 2. Service B started mediocre and is really ramped up great. Service C has been slowly improving, right? So it gives you a sense of history. It also gives you a sense of where should we be investing our time to improve things. So it helps us as engineers make decisions. It helps managers make decisions because they could roll it up on a team level and they could see which teams need the most resources. Now, if you notice, I didn't say which teams are doing the worst, because this is not about assessing the team. This is about assessing the service, right? And that's a very important point. I'll drill down to that a little bit later. So why did this work? It was super simple. It was a spreadsheet. No one started a software development process. If you're right now thinking, like, oh, I'm going to write code to do this, you're not going to finish figuring out the database schema before, you know, the person sitting next to you just says, hey, this is great, I'm going to do it with a spreadsheet. Low barrier to entry, very easy to get started. It leverages pride and ego as motivators. So you do this assessment. As a manager, you don't have to say, you should fix this, because by the end of the meeting, people are going to be saying, oh, look at that, I want to fix that, I want to fix that, I want to fix that. It creates good culture. It's blameless. As I said before, we assess, or the process assesses the service, not the people. And also creates transparency and responsibility. So people don't want to look bad, right? And they take responsibility. Good engineers will take responsibility and want to fix things. So, and it's blameless, which is important because if people feel that they're being targeted, then they're gonna lie, right? And you don't want you don't want any incentives to just like list yourself as a five for all your categories. It's also a non-monetary recognition of good work. It encourages copying greatness. So if your team is having a problem and wants to improve in a certain area, you can look at which teams are doing really well and go talk to those people and see how they did it. Being asked, like, hey, you're doing great, how can I copy you? That is a great compliment, and that can be better than a raise. Also, it helps the engineers decide where should they apply their time. So a good engineer fixes a problem, a great engineer fixes a problem permanently, and a really great engineer builds a new paradigm that impacts all teams to fix, you know, fixes a problem across the board or eliminates a problem in the first place. So engineers can look at this and say, you know, maybe a junior engineer might say, yeah, okay, we're red in this category, I'm going to fix that. But if I want a promotion, I'm going to build that new paradigm. I'm going to notice that, hey, one-third of our teams have red in this area. I'm going to build a new paradigm that's going to fix this problem globally, right? So it's enabling engineers to have more impact, which is better for your business and better for their careers. Oh, and that's the last part. It helps direct cross-team impact. Also, if you've ever been in a situation where you've said, I want to fix this problem, and everyone says, that's not really a problem, well, you can point to this as data and say, yes, it is. Look, all these different teams are would be helped if we could fix this problem. Or you see, oh, you're right, we are the only ones with that problem. Maybe I just learned something, right? Non-monetary recognition of good work is super important. If, in particular, you should not tie bonuses to these assessments. If you got, first of all, that would just encourage everyone to give themselves all fives. And as manager, the management role in this is to kind of keep everyone honest, and that would make managers' work more difficult. You don't want to do that. But more importantly, if bonuses were tied to these scores, think about how people would act. Well, if a service is in trouble, it might take months or years to dig it out of that hole. No one would want to join a team if it's guaranteeing that they're going to have crappy bonuses for the next couple cycles, right? And that's the opposite of what you want. You want your best people to look at this chart and say, oh, look at all that red. I'm going to move to that team. I'm going to help them fix it up. In fact, you want to create this virtuous cycle where your best engineers are hopping from problem to problem, fixing it, and then moving on. That is a great virtuous cycle to create in a really big organization. So, and that's not going to happen if you tie these assessments to your to bonuses, or tie bonuses to this. Another reason I really like this process is it seeks perfection, but doesn't require it. If you're demanding perfection, you're going to create an incentive to lie, which is bad, but you're also going to create an incentive to apply resources to things that don't matter, right? Now, let's take backups. Backups, for some services, super important. You don't want to lose people's private, you know, personal data. That would be really bad. Backups should be a five. But there might be other services where a four is good enough. And in fact, getting from a four to five would just be a waste of company money. So you don't want to have a like company-wide initiative where we're going to try to get fives in all categories. You want to say, I'm expecting management to get a four probably everywhere, three where it doesn't matter, five where it's really important. By the way, that one aspect can be really difficult for some management to understand, that, you know, perfection is not important, but you need to explain it in terms of waste. I like to explain it as, you know, three nines is good, four nines is expensive, and every time you add a nine, it's probably going to cost you 10 times more than the previous nine, or maybe 100 times more than the previous nine. Okay, so that's story two. Story three, Stack Overflow. In 2013, I joined Stack Overflow. And in 2016, I became the manager of the SRE team. And as manager, I wanted to apply this technique. And because, I mean, our operations were pretty good, but they were uneven. And I wanted to, I felt using this technique would be a good way to identify the problem areas. The problem is that Stack Overflow is a lot smaller. You know, well, a little smaller, I mean, you know. We had one SRE team, not hundreds. We had a very granular definition of service. And so I had to scale the process down. So how did I do that? Well, instead of dozens or hundreds of cross-linked spreadsheets with automated roll-ups and all these cool things, I just made it one spreadsheet. I let the SREs on my team create their own rubric. Like, I came up with the structure, but let them fill it in so that they felt more part of the process. And the scores were pass-fail. Initially, people were, well, I was afraid people were going to really resist this whole process. So I said, you know, we're just looking for, like, probably everything's a pass. We're just looking for where the fails are, just so I, as manager, and my bosses can, excuse me, can get a handle on the state of things. So the starting, the scoring started out pass-fail, and I used the same scoring we use in our yearly evaluation, which was at the time, this has changed, but at the time it was A and B, with B being fail. But they came back, my team came back and said, you know, we're okay with pass-fail, but there's some things that are really bad and we want to, like, highlight them. So I said, okay, it's now pass-fail and oh my God, fail. And then they came back, you know, they said, you know, some of our passes are, like, really awesome, and we want to highlight that. These are the exemplars, the things other people should copy. And I said, okay. So in my mind, it's still a pass-fail, but it's actually a four-point scale. The spreadsheet's very simple. This is a snapshot. This is live data. We're a very transparent company at Stack Overflow. I didn't even try to change this. I just won't tell you what month this is from. So you could see, you know, mostly A's. That's good. A couple, there's a little pink and some red. And, you know, as they were filling out the spreadsheet, which we did kind of live, the whole team got together and people were filling stuff out. And as they were filling it out, without me having to say anything, people were already like, oh, yeah, I want to fix that. Yeah, oh, yes. Also, we started slow. I had 9 categories that I wanted to consider for each service, but we started slow. We started with 4 categories. So our backups and restore is good. Upgradeability, which you couldn't get a 5 unless you could upgrade the software without a user visible outage. That was a 4. 5 was no user visible outage and it's automated. Failover resiliency. Have we tested the? Do you have a DR plan? Have we tested the DR plan? And monitoring is it monitored? Do we have good alerting? Later, we added things about, you know, build automation and, you know, do we have a separate test and dev environment, or are people, you know, of course, we would never be testing in production, but documentation, security, capacity planning. Okay, so why did this work? It worked because we kept it simple. Simple, simple, simple. This is like at the beginning of each month, we have a quick meeting. We update the scores. It's no biggie. It's blameless. Like I mentioned before, we're assessing the service, not the people. People are motivated to expose their own warts and fix them. It was really great. I was able to take the first version of this spreadsheet and bring it to my management, and they didn't have to understand. I mean, my management's incredibly technical, but they didn't have to be technical. They, you know, you show this to anyone, and they say, oh, red bad, green good. Give resources to red. Green is good, right? That's what you want. That's management loved it. They were like, great. We want less red next month. Yes. And so these things were no longer invisible to management. You know, I could have started out by saying, I could have filled this out for them, right? I could have brought them to the meeting and said, I've assessed your services and these are where the problems are, right? And that would have just pissed people off. But more so, I bet the reaction I would have gotten, I bet I bet people would have said, don't tell me what's wrong. I've been trying to tell you what's wrong. No one listens, right? How many, not anyone here, but maybe your coworkers have said something like this, right? This gave the channel to let people communicate, right? I mean, most engineers think that managers are like, have ESP or like, you know, when I grumble under my breath about something, the CEO somehow hears this, but it's not true. You need something like this so that these things get communicated to management. Now, all's not perfect. This did create some new problems. In particular, all that red, people wanted to start a project for each one of those red things. In fact, we would have been working on nothing but tech debt if we had done that. Also, I want to take a break, a pause for a moment to say, you really shouldn't create projects to fix a red square. What you should do is you should improve things. You should do a project that you believe will improve things. Then, after the project is done, see if the color changed, and if it didn't, revert the project, right? This is, you should have a scientific method towards this. So people were tempted to just like ignore all other projects and just work on this. So we had, I came up with three solutions for that. First of all, I set up some rate limiting. I said, as we do our monthly and quarterly project plans, about 20% should be, 20% of our project hours should be things that in our scientific method will improve our operational hygiene. That was good. Another thing we did is we created theme months. So we would say, like, January is going to be backup month, and we're going to, you know, try to work on backups on all the different services. This worked great, like unexpectedly great. It worked really well because even though my team was all working on different backup projects, because they were all working on backups, they could help each other more than one would expect. Like, they were, almost all my team works remotely, and there can be a feeling of isolation when you're working remotely, but now we all had, like, this team cohesion because we were all working on backups that month, and we were talking about backups, and backups were cool, and, oh, you know, I just learned this about the backups, and let me help you with that, the backups, and even if someone was on a system that the backups were totally different than all other services, at least they felt included, so it actually improved team cohesion, which is an unexpected win. The other thing I did is I try to focus on the theory of constraints. How many people here are familiar with the theory of constraints? Oh, good. I have a slide that explains it. This is really explained well in the Phoenix Project. How many people here have read the Phoenix Project? In theory, there should be fewer hands or more hands. Yeah, anyway. So the theory of constraints. If you have a process, oh, look at this awesome process. It has four steps, and each step is able to do 10 items per week, except step three, only 5 items per week. Well, you're going to get a backlog of work. Step three is the bottleneck. You know where the bottleneck is because that's where the backlog of work starts to accumulate. Now, the theory of constraints says you want to improve the system, right? Okay, so we're going to do some optimization. We're going to automate something or document it better or add more people to that step. We're going to make an improvement. Well, the theory of constraints says if you make an improvement upstream of the bottleneck, you're just going to create a bigger bottleneck or you're going to create a bigger backlog. So don't do that. If you optimize below the bottleneck, well, that's starved for work. You're just going to create more starvation, so don't do that. So therefore, the theory of constraints says the only place you should put effort for optimizing a system is at the bottleneck. Now, you don't have to do crazy super metrics. I mean, it's good if you can, but in many cases, I could just ask the team, like, okay, you've proposed like 10 projects that would improve our operations. Where's our bottleneck? Which one is going to fix at the bottleneck? And people would think about it, oh yeah, and it might be something technical, it might be something non-technical, it might be, you know, our ticket system sucks. Okay, if that's the bottleneck, or maybe the way we're processing tickets sucks, or maybe it's something about on-call. So it could be technical or non-technical. We make an improvement right at the bottleneck, and that guides which projects we are going to pick. I had a this is sort of a sub-story. We have a new product at the company. So almost everyone raised their hand. They said they're familiar with Stack Overflow. How many people know about Stack Overflow Enterprise or Stack Overflow Teams? Oh, okay. Stack is a new product in the last year or so. Enterprises. It's a private question and answer forum for your company. So if you have, you know, hundreds or thousands of developers, they might love Stack Overflow, but they can't ask questions about some internal proprietary library in the public website because, you know, no one would know about it. And it's proprietary. So we have this new thing. You can get your own site. And we have a hosted and on-prem version. Anyway, this is not a sales pitch. This is building up to the fact that we had this new service, this hosted service, which was a big deal for the SRE team. We had a lot of work involved in that. And I intentionally didn't do the assessment on this for the first 3 months because I wanted to give people breathing room to get the service up and running. But now that the service is up and running, we've started doing the assessments, and it's really helped us identify areas of improvement. Okay. So that's my three stories. But wait, there's more. There's a fourth story, and that's the story that you write. I hope all of you take these ideas, and when you go home from this conference, you apply this at your organization, and next year, I would like to see you I'd like to hear your story about how it went. Maybe some of you will present a talk on how it went. I have a little instruction manual for how to do it. So this is the shameless plug. So someone said to me, Tom, I don't think I've ever seen you give a talk where you didn't find a way of mentioning one of your books. And I said, oh, good, it's working. So I'm going to give away a copy of this book. But chapter 55 is kind of the instruction manual for doing this kind of thing. And chapter 56 is a series of look-fors. Like, you know, if your backups are at level 3, look, you know, some look-fors are, you know, there's this kind of automation. You'll see these things. So do this in your enterprise. Do it grassroots. Management should set high standards, but let the engineers figure out how to get there. Start with one. If you have many S3 teams or IT or operations teams, start with one team. Don't try to do a global initiative. The best way is to start small and then grow. People like to copy success. Pick a rubric that maybe start the rubric, but let it grow over time. Provide the resources if you're in management. Do it with a spreadsheet. Don't start a big software development project. Try to create a blameless, transparent assessment. Focus on you're judging the service, not the people. When I did this, I did a dress rehearsal of this talk at a local meetup, and someone said, Tom, you know, a lot of people in the audience might be from enterprises with, let's say, a kind of a toxic environment, and this is just going to put a big target on their back. Like, people are going to say, look how terrible you are, and point at all the red stuff. So I want to just end by giving, like, three bits of advice. First of all, if you're in that situation, if that's a real risk for you, start small. Maybe, you know, transparency is great, but maybe for you, you just want that transparency to be within your team. Highly recommend this book, Beyond Blame. It's a quick read. It's actually it's a storybook. It tells the story of engineers going through a learning process where they learn that, actually it's the management that learned how important a blameless culture is. Dave Zwieback's a great author. And if those two things don't work, my third bit of advice is, well, maybe you need to send a resume out to other people. So, in conclusion, nobody likes to be told their baby is ugly. On the other hand, if you give an engineer an opportunity to point out the problem, they will beg to be the one to fix it. And that's my time. Thank you very much. Oh. So, we don't have time for questions, but let's... Okay, so how are we going to give this away? So what's today's date? The 30th? Okay, if anyone who has a dollar bill with 3 zeros, last two serial numbers, last two digits of the serial number. You don't have to give me the dollar. Or is anyone's birthday today? That's a lot easier. Okay, we're going with the dollar bill. Anyone, 30? 30? Yep. Okay, congratulations.